The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Continuing to be open phones on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. We've been talking a lot about plastics because Senator Merkley over in Korea talking about wanting to ban the use of single-use plastics because of the microplastics in the water and the environment and in people's bodies, too, for that matter. And, of course, the ocean-floating plastic, having a big bunch of plastic out there is not exactly progress, the size of Texas to have that out there. And, we have to be honest with ourselves. So he's not wrong about the problem. Of course, his solution is that you ban the single-use plastic, and yet what is the unintended consequence of that? And that's the interesting thing about utopian thinkers such as the Merck is that they never think downstream about what would actually happen. Even just in the medical world, if you ban single-use plastics, okay? And yet, all I have to do is just even look what I wore into work this morning. I have my wonderful Columbia jacket, winter jacket that Linda got me a number of years ago here, and I'm looking at the ingredients of it or how it's made. So here we go. The shell. Hey, there's actually some cotton in it. The shell of the jacket is 60% cotton, 40% polyester. The rib is 75% acrylic, that's another plastic, 22% polyester, more plastics, and 3% elastane. So elastane must be some kind of an elastic. I would imagine that is also a polymer of some form or another, right? And let's see, the lining, 100% plastic, polyester, sleeve lining, 100% nylon, polyester, insulation, 100% polyester, the entire thing except for 60% of the actual outer shell, the actual part that people see. It's all plastic, every single bit of it. And I would venture a guess that that most of the clothes you're wearing are pretty much the same way. So you call for the end of these plastics, and yikes, that. Now, if you all want to go back to cotton and wool, cotton, wool, that's going to be a big change. Doesn't even necessarily work for everybody. I know. Well, animal skins, that's it. Merkley in an animal skin on the floor of the Senate. Wouldn't that be something to see? Mr. Natural. Anyway, let's catch up on the rest of Town Hall News. More of your calls also coming up, too. I'm sorry. I'm just laughing here because Matt from Grants Pass ends up sending me a text message. And let's see if I can bring that up, and I'll hold it up to the Facebook Live. Future man. And, of course, it's a caveman with his stone spear. But, of course, at least the caveman with the stone-tipped spear, Matt, at least he's sustainable, and there are no microplastics out there. And, by the way, microplastics are a thing. I'm not poo-pooing what Senator Merkley is talking about. Big scientists and medical folks have been concerned about the rise of plastics in our body from the environmental exposure and the grinding down and the dusts and everything else and the clothes we wear and the water that we drink because, well, just think about it. You take your polyester clothes and you wash them in water, and then where does the water go? Into the system. Anyway, we'll have all that conversation continuing here. Hey, speaking of the present men and women, though, they are going to be in Salem this afternoon. It's going to be a quick gaveling in for a special session. I'm going to talk with State Representative Dwayne Junker about why they're doing it. And I have a couple of questions about this. He's not actually able to attend, but he can still comment on what they're going to be doing, all right? Price of gold, about just under $2,700 right now. Still kind of sitting around there in that $2,650 to $2,750 kind of range here. I don't know, given the inflation, which is still coming through, they're still saying that inflation is, well, it's ticking upward. Believe me, it is considerably higher than we think. And part of that is that a financial guy that I was reading the other day was talking about how the inflation is actually understated, especially when it comes to health care and health insurance, because so much of it is hidden. It's hidden because being paid for on the other side with employers, those kind of things. And he's absolutely right about this. And when you look at the hard cost, it's just exploding everywhere. And the federal government, of course, is trying to tell you differently because it wants to continue to print money and lower interest rates. So plan accordingly and maybe having some gold or silver as part of your help beat inflation, kind of like a little bit of inflation insurance. It's not such a bad idea. Talk to your financial advisor if you're wondering about how that works. But even better yet, just talk to my friends, the recognized experts at Jay Austin. Jay Austin and Company, gold and silver buyers in Ashland, 1632 Ashland Street, 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass. They understand these things. Mark and Andrea are big fans of you actually possessing it, not necessarily putting it in the gold-backed IRAs like so many of the big boys nationwide are trying to do. Because, you know, ultimately, not President Trump, but a future presidency may say, we need to take your 401k and replace it with a government bond. And then they would take your gold there for inflation keeping purposes or protecting purposes and then replace it with a government debt thing. That kind of eliminates the purpose of having gold in the first place, all right? Get it, keep it, give it for a Christmas gift, all sorts of things. Just talk to Jay Austin to do this. Jay Austin at Ashland and Grants Pass, fortunereserve.com. Quarter after 7 on Conspiracy Theory Thursday, State Representative Dwayne Junker rejoins the show. Welcome back, Dwayne. Always good hearing from you. How are things?
Things are great. I've been up in Salem this week, came home late last night, and, I had this joke on my Facebook with these, you know, they're doing all this construction at the Capitol, and they have these drains for something up there, and I said, you know, are they... I don't think they're draining this swamp.
They're building it. They're building it in Salem. We know that.
They're building more, you know.
So they're not done with the repairs to the Capitol yet? That's been going on for years, hasn't it?
Oh, my. I mean, we have to. We can't even park underneath. We have to park out in the street. And I've been there a year now, and outside my office it's like living next to a jackhammer. Half the time, it just...
And this was all about, if I recall correctly, wasn't it seismic retrofits so that no matter what, we could have a 25 Richter scale earthquake and the Oregon Capitol will still be standing, right? Isn't that why they were doing it?
We're preparing for the big one, you know?
Mm-hmm. Big one's coming. Yeah, everyone else will be dead and gone, and the coast will be washed away, but that's okay. Salem will be there to make sure and mail out the tax checks, right? The tax bills.
Hey, your taxes, you can't die yet.
Yeah, you're not allowed to. All right, we're being a little sarcastic, but it is Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Can't help it. Now, I know you had to come back for some personal reasons this morning, and that's fine. Take care of some family issues. Good dad, okay? You're being a good dad. We'll just leave it at that. But I wanted to ask you, why are they gaveling in for a special session this afternoon? And I think I kind of understand where it's going, but... I don't understand why. Could you explain why they're doing this session for a little bit? What's the story?
Well, we contract when there's fires through a lot of private agencies that help fight fires. And a lot of them haven't been paid since July or June or whatever it was. You know, some of them are owing thousands and thousands of dollars because there's no money in the budget to pay them in the forestry budget. So they have asked people, you know, the legislators to come back to pass this emergency to pay the bills. That's kind of the simple form of it. You know what I'm saying?
All right. Now, is this the Oregon Department of Forestry or a different agency that's involved, or are there multiple agencies involved in this?
This is the Oregon Department of Forestry. And I think that's where myself would have a lot of problems. That is, you know, management of the forest, you know, historically mismanaging the forest, all the problems, and now you want to have this emergency to pay the firefighters without any change. You know, it's just grossly irresponsible to do just to pay money out without asking for any change in Oregon. We all know, we live in Southern Oregon, so this is like a big topic for us. We look around, there's trees.
Sure.
And this is a mismanagement. When Josephine County is like 70% owned by the government, this is the government's responsibility. Why, you know, they should be managing. They're asking us to manage our property, but they don't manage their property.
So this is going back to, if I recall correctly, what, slow federal reimbursements for firefighting with state paid crews, I guess, on federal land. Is that kind of what we're talking about here?
Yeah.
Having to get together?
Yeah, we you know, right here in Josephine County, there is crews that have, you know, companies. I don't know if their crew hasn't been paid, but their company hasn't been paid yet for a job they did, you know.
So they already spent the diesel, they already hired the crews, or, well, maybe they haven't paid the crews. Of course, I don't know how you get people to work for the crews.
Yeah, I don't know if they've paid their crews, but the company themselves, you know, whatever company it is that, you know, we'll just pick many of them we have around here, they go out and fight fires. They haven't received their money. You know, they can be owed $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 for their crews going out to fight fires in Eastern Oregon, you know, wherever it's at.
Yeah, well, I would imagine maybe the crews got paid, or many of the crews got paid, because then you find yourself in trouble with bully, right? You know, you don't pay people after they've done the work. Oh my gosh, the state will come down on you like a ton of bricks, isn't that right? The proverbial ton of bricks. If you don't get paid.
To look at that, the state will come after you for not paying your crew, but the state hasn't paid their bills.
Okay. I think I understand this now. All right.
Government always gets away with things.
Okay, now this may be a really dumb question, okay? But why is it that Oregon Department of Forestry didn't have a better idea of how much they were spending, or how, because it seems to me that you're getting in, You're having to go there today, or the legislature's in there, to have to backfill an agency that should have had some idea of how much money was going out. Or did they warn the legislature that they were running out of money?
No, for me, I never knew they were running out of money. There's so many different budgets going out there, but they shouldn't have knew. This is not a new thing that's happened. We've had forest fires for years, and they're costing more and more money.
Aren't there any reserves in the Oregon Department of Forestry's budget? Every agency that I'm aware of, every governmental agency, has some form of reserve in case you have temporary situations. Or is it that typical thing in which, nope, we got to spend everything we have down to the penny every year, or else?
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know the exact how they're spending their money, but I could tell you my experience with government and, you know, government. In, you know, my time in the military and a little bit of working for the government, is just, if you don't spend it, you lose it. So
right.
That's always been a mentality of you never get a bonus for saving money. I just don't understand that.
Mm.
You know, I would actually say that, you know, not all government like that. So I know the city of Grants Pass, we require each agency to save a certain amount of percent each year in their budget. I know, you know, so there is good, probably, cities and counties that are trying to do that to save money. But when it comes to states and federal government, they don't do that at all.
Hmm.
You know, I think cities and counties, especially they're strapped, they're a little bit better at that. But I would say our state of Oregon is, you know, it's rich and the people are poor.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at what they're talking about, the state's share of the, firefighting costs this year are reported to be about $300 million, a little over $300 million. And about half that amount is the state's responsibility. But even then, that's more than double the most expensive fire season ever in 2020, and five times the 10-year average. So we really did get hit with something that was not really budgeted for, but there is no reserve fund, apparently, for them either, right? Is that kind of where we find ourselves?
Yeah, and you just can't take money from other agencies to pay your bills without, you know, there has to be a re-voting. You can't do that. You know,
is there any way that you can fire the Department of Equity and Inclusion people and then take their salaries and put them into paying the firefighters at ODF? I don't know.
I think that is, you know, what we should be talking about. It's not that we don't want to pay the firefighters.
Yeah.
I think we want to pay these people. I think we need to talk about the leadership and, you know, the governor's, you know, agenda, and the head of the Oregon Department of Forestry. We should be talking about, what are we going to do to fix all these problems? Instead, we're just going to pay money and we're going to forget about this huge problem we have in Oregon with firefighters. It's not climate change. It's mismanagement.
Oh, no. According to Senator Jeff Merkley, though, it's climate chaos. It's not climate change. It's climate chaos now. It's even worse than you think, Dwayne. Really.
Yeah, you know, I would disagree with him. I had some meeting with some, you know, people that are in the, you know, habitat the other day, and taking care of the forest also is good habitat, you know, for animals. And we just, and I'm not an expert in this area. You know, I just listen to people and ask questions here and hopefully make really good decisions. But I just don't understand the leadership where we're going. It's just their religion is, you know, climate change, you know, DEI.
And deindustrializing. And of course, now the Merck says we need to get rid of plastics or single-use plastics. And now he's not wrong about that environmental problem. It is an issue. But at the same time, have you actually considered the costs and the impact and the chaos that would be caused by such treaties? But, you know, now we know that Obamacare is a failure, too. But we're not supposed to say that, right? You know, there's all sorts of things. There are certain religions that there's always a great solution from the political left to solve us and get us into this utopian kind of mindset. Hey, before we take off, in today's session, I know you're not going to be in this particular session, but in today's special session, is it just going to be dealing with this, or is there talk about people opening this up to all sorts of other hanky-panky that could be done? Do you know?
No, the bill's out there. I didn't really look at the bill, to be honest with you, because I'm not going to be there. You know, we've been promised that it's just going to be this bill. That's it.
Okay. So it's not where all of a sudden they're going to go off and have themselves a mini little let's tax the crap out of Oregonians, what's left of them. Okay. It's not
that.
No,
they're just going to move money around, is what I'm hearing. You know, and most people don't know this. The Democrats threatened us that they were going to take this $35 million that they put towards veterans in Roseburg if we didn't do this. And I would have called their bluff. Like, come on, sure, you're going to take money from veterans. I'm like, well, I'm going to negotiate down to the last minute. I mean, I have a little bit of sales background, and I don't think you should. Everything should be the Democrats' fault, you know?
Yeah.
We have no power, Republicans.
Yes, so don't give them the appearance of the bipartisanship. All right. Hey, I appreciate the call, Ben. Thanks for explaining this. So hopefully it's going to be just this, just paying off the ODF bad bill, and then I guess we'll get to the other bad bills that'll be in January and February. Okay.
Oh, we've already been going through those, Bill. We're ramping up. You should be happy.
All right, I'll talk with you about that more later. Okay, Dwayne. Thanks for the call. All right. Good having you check in.
Thanks, Bill.
State Representative Dwayne Junker. It is 7:26.
This holiday season, Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. wants to extend a heartfelt thank you to all of their amazing customers. Your trust and support have made this year truly special. As everyone celebrates this joyous time, they want to wish you happy holidays and a happy new year filled with warmth, happiness, and prosperity. From the Westfall team to your home, thank you for choosing Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. Visit them at StephenWestfallRoofingInc.com for all your roofing solutions.
The Rogue Gardener is sponsored by Grange Co-op. And remember, use the right tool for the job.
The Dirt Devil has a little plastic spout that folds down, and it'll go right into blossoms and get the bugs without damaging the blossoms.
I know they're not so high-powered, because every time I try to use one on my truck's upholstery, it never gets any dirt out. But I bet it would get a bug.
It gets bugs. It's a real handy tool.
Catch the Rogue Gardener live Saturdays 10 to noon, Sunday morning Encore at 9 on KMED.
Matt here with an urgent message from the Josephine County Republican Party. Similar to what President Trump experienced, politically motivated citizens are using lawfare and misinformation in an attempt to recall Commissioner John West, one of our most fiscally conservative commissioners of all time. Win or lose, this misguided recall will waste 60,000 of our hard-earned taxpayer dollars. When you receive your recall ballot, vote no on this political attack and drop it at the county courthouse, the Republican Party headquarters, or as a last resort in the mail. Your action is urgently needed. If those opposed do not submit ballots, one of our most effective commissioners will be recalled. Stop the John West derangement syndrome. The Josephine County Republican Party urges you to counter this injustice by voting no and turning in your ballot by December 17th. Thank you. Paid for by Josephine County Republican Central Committee, PAC 319.
Welcome to the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Give Bill a call at 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
29 after 7. Julie Niles Fry just popping it in, let her in. We're going to talk about the amazing power of school boards. We're told that get on the school board and you'll be able to change all the problems. Okay. Yeah, that's what we think. Let me go to the phones here. 770-5633. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Good morning. Hi, who's this?
Hey, Bill, this is Brian.
Brian, what are you thinking this morning, huh?
I was hearing you talking about with Dwayne Junker. So I got several friends that work for different companies that fight fires.
Yes.
One locally, two over up near the Bend area. And they don't get paid until the company gets paid.
Oh, really? So it's not one of those things where, because I was figuring that the company was going to have to pay out of its reserves and then get reimbursed by the state, because Boley will just jump on people on that kind of stuff if you don't pay, right?
Yeah, I heard you say that, and I'm thinking maybe, Grayback or some of these bigger companies might do that, but my buddies work for smaller, like excavation companies or whatever, that get called in. And they don't get paid until the company gets the check from the state.
Oh, man. I got to tell you, that is putting the hurt on a lot of those workers. They already did the work back in July, right?
And sometimes the money will trickle, whatever it might be. It might be like 10% of what the contract's for, so they can at least pay some of these guys something. But what I've been told by my buddies, they don't get paid until the company gets paid.
That is interesting. I did not realize that those people were being hung out to dry, so to speak.
Yeah.
Wow.
Not speaking for all the companies, but just my buddies, that's what they told me. They don't work for like Grayback or something. They work for a smaller like excavation company, like I said.
Hey, appreciate you letting me know. Didn't know. Like I said, if there's every day that I learn something, I think it's a positive day. Yikes. Well, I tell you, that makes it really easy to attract your top talent, right? Your top firefighting talent. You might have to wait 6 months for your paycheck to come in. That won't bother you none, will it? Let me go to line two. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Hey, Bill. It's Mr. Outdoors with a very special breaking news report out of Northern California.
Oh, yeah,
Caltrans
buddy.
Caltrans is reporting that Highway 199 in Del Norte County is closed by a major landslide between milepost 8.3 to milepost 13. Actually, they're saying the closure ranges from 8.3 to 13 miles from U.S. 101. They say they've got crews responding. There is no estimated time to reopen, but this is a really major slide, and this is a different looking area than what we typically see the big slides in.
Could you tell us, we all drive the coast quite often, or many of us drive the coast quite often, or frequently rather, and what could you describe what area that is in particular near any?
Exactly. They're saying it's 8.3 to 13 miles from U.S. 101. Mm-hmm. So this is way further west than Patrick Creek or the Kelly Burn area.
Right.
So I'm trying to pinpoint it myself, but they're stating, again, U.S. 199 closed in Del Norte County. There is no estimated time to reopen.
And this could be a big deal.
I want to add in to what Brian just said from personal experience.
Yes.
It is not uncommon. I mean, granted, I haven't been on the fire lines and I haven't been paid for that in quite a long period of time. But I will tell you this, I frequently did not get my paycheck for firefighting from the state of Oregon until late November to almost Christmas time, which, being that I was, quote, a volunteer for Redmond Fire Department, I had other jobs. I didn't mind that as bad. And I always used that money, honestly, at Christmas time.
Hmm.
Because from the state of Oregon, we wouldn't see it typically until late in the year. So this has been kind of a long-standing issue, and I don't know what it is that they always seem to drag it out until the end of the year. But if people don't know that, contractors for ODF not getting paid until December for fires you fought July and August, that's not uncommon at all.
Did not realize that, and like I said, we're learning a lot more about this, but that really is a deadbeaty kind of way to try to attract talent to fighting fire in the summer, isn't it?
It's kind of the un- unspoken thing. And like I said, I was experiencing it when I was with Redmond Fire Department, when I had other income, so this wasn't super critical to me. But imagine being a seasonal, a guy trying to make money, mm-hmm. for example, say, to go to school, or a gal trying to do the same thing, and then you're waiting for these checks, and they finally show up, like, now? I mean, okay, yeah, great. It might help you make Christmas, but you may be way behind on bills and you may already be getting collection calls. I mean, this is ridiculous. I'm kind of irritated to find out it still goes on. They should have tightened this up and fixed that mechanism a long time ago. But then again, it's Oregon.
Well, I would also add that ODF should have a very substantial reserve fund for such situations, because you can't budget for an emergency necessarily. You can't know that. And
oh yeah, but it's government, Bill, and you don't have reserve funds. You've got to expend it all by June 30th. There's no such thing as carrying forward, and it is one of the most maddening things that real world people don't understand about government and how that came to be the situation. I have no idea, but if you're carrying excess on June 30th, then it's assumed you had too much money, and then they'll cut you in the budget.
Yep,
back.
That is the way, and it's a pretty stupid way to run the railroad. All right, Greg, thanks so much, and yep, 199's closed at the state line. That's pretty much it, and we'll talk more about that tomorrow. Hopefully, it'll be open by tomorrow's outdoor report. We just don't know. We'll find out,
yeah,
all right?
Yeah, we just don't know, but yeah, when I saw that break from Caltrans, I knew I had to give you a call and get the word out.
All right, appreciate it. Greg, thanks so much. Greg Roberts from RogueWeather.com. 7:35, we'll catch up on news here in just a moment. Julie Niles Fry, who is one of my favorite recovering school board members, recovering, still recovering from the trauma. But we'll have a little conversation, a little bit about Michael Williams, but kind of how the system works and how, boy, the status quo is really tough to take on. We'll kick this around coming up.
Stop by this week for farm-tastic deals at your local Coastal.
Coastal Farm and Ranch, just what your holidays need.
From Wednesday, December 11th through Tuesday, December 17th, it's ho, ho, ho and a bale full of fun with $100 off the Coleman Power Sports B200 Mini Bike. Plus, find amazing value in our tool department. Save $90 off the Milwaukee 3/8 inch 56 piece ratchet and socket set, and save $150 off the Milwaukee half inch impact wrench kit. Give that special woman in your life a meaningful and beautifully crafted gift with 25% off jewelry, including Montana Silversmiths and Double S. Find all your project and holiday supplies for less this week at Coastal.
Coastal Farm and Ranch, just what your holidays need.
Shop now for a country Christmas full of savings at Coastal.
News brought to you by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground. Visit MilletteConstruction.com.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. Medford's rolling out an $880,000 mobile emergency command center. It'll provide a platform to help emergency responders better communicate and coordinate during wildfires, earthquakes, floods, hostage negotiations, or crime scene investigations. The Oregon Department of Agriculture is releasing details about its program to test milk for bird flu. Oregon is one of six states to test milk. By January, 75% of the state's milk will be under surveillance. There have been no cases of bird flu detected in Oregon dairy cattle or milk yet. The Oregon High School Success Grant Program needs more data to determine if it's actually working. A state audit finds that over 6 years, $760 million has been used to increase career and technical programs and increase programs to reduce dropouts. The audit says there isn't enough information to know if the grants are successful. Bill London, KMED News.
Every carpenter wants to teach his son how to do carpentry, but daughters can build things too. So when it comes to carpentry, tools, lumber, and building materials, remember that making the right choice is very important. And the right choice for lumber and other building materials is Hughes Lumber. At Hughes Lumber, they offer the best lumber at the best prices to all builders. Hughes Lumber, serving everyone on Crater Lake Highway.
One of each K4 VIN 016551 MSRP 24145. Telluride VIN 576420 MSRP 43330 5982 due 10K miles per year. Zero security deposit. All incentives and discounts to dealer plus tax, title, license, 150 registration processing fee. Trading in a vehicle will not eliminate your debt. Negative equity applied to new loan balance ends 1225.
Get the gift you really want. It's the holiday trade up during the season of new traditions at Kia Medford. Upgrade your old sleigh, then save on our huge selection of brand new Kias. Trade up to the all new 2025 Kia K4 LXS, just $169 a month lease, or a new 2025 Kia Telluride S all-wheel drive, only $229 a month lease, both for 24 months. Plus, once we make a deal at Kia Medford, we'll pay off your trade no matter how much you owe. Need credit? Go to KiaMedford.com to get pre-approved in less than 30 seconds with no effect on your credit score. Hurry in and trade up to a K4, $169 a month, or Telluride, $229 a month at Kia Medford. Click KiaMedford.com.
On a silent night, have you ever asked, do you hear what I hear as your house is settling? Millette Construction reminds you this holiday season that while you deck the halls, if you notice sloping floors and cracks in walls, that's a sign your home's foundation needs a gift too. Call Millette Construction because all we want for Christmas is to level your house and repair the damage. Have yourself a merry level Christmas from Millette Construction. Visit MilletteConstruction.com.
Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is celebrating its 20-year anniversary as the Rogue Valley's car, truck, Jeep, and SUV accessory upfit headquarters. Specializing in spray-on bedliners, vehicle undercoating, tonneau covers, and the largest selection of fiberglass, commercial, and metal canopies in the area. Running boards, Nerf bars, bumpers, winches, and LED lighting are also on the menu, along with hitches, decked drawer systems, and bed slides too. Come see Oregon Truck and Auto Authority today and get your vehicle ready for your next adventure.
Hi, I'm Charlene, owner of American Industrial Door, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
7:41, I appreciate you waking up here on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. By the way, if you just woke up and you're planning on driving to the coast, don't bother. It's just going to be a while at the Oregon-California border. Big slide, and it's in a slide, according to people telling me, in an area that is not normally thought of as sliding. You know, you always think about the slides in the Patrick Creek area. But no, it's a little closer right there to the state line, okay? So we'll let you know when we find out more. They're trying to get a little bit of a bead on that, but no time given on when they're going to be able to open that up. And, well, of course, you can always go up to Highway 20 or down to Highway 299 in California, but, boy, that's a long detour, as we all know, if you just wanted to go do a little fishing at the coast. So we'll get back to you on that, okay? Joining me in studio is Julie Niles Fry. Julie Niles Fry, a former colleague of mine, used to work here at Bi-Coastal Media way back in the day. And what are you doing these days here, Julie?
I help companies build marketing programs.
Good for you.
Yes.
Yeah, someone's got to do it.
So that's right.
You're kind of doing the same work, but just in a different capacity.
Correct.
Okay, very good. Now, a number of years ago, I talked with you on the show about your experience as a school board member at Rogue River.
Yes.
And you were not on the board at that point, and it's kind of nice to talk to school board members once they leave because then they can express their frustration and irritation and often hostility to the system when they're no longer on the board. Now, there has been an interesting wrinkle of developments at Medford 549C. Big questions were made about a SRO there being reassigned. This was several months ago that this all started. And Michael Williams, who was on the school board, I've never met him. I've talked to him for a couple of times, but there's a lot of public support of his concern about the reassigning of the SRO. And one thing leads to another, and the board seems to be really kind of sideways with him. And then there's talk about, okay, you brought a knife to the school, you know, on your work, on the work belt that he has because he's a hemp worker, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's just turned into a big mess. And I can't help but think that the root of this is what you described to me once, and maybe you can confirm that I heard it correctly, is that school boards are usually filled with a bunch of type A individuals that want to go in there and actually make something happen. Because you listen to talk radio and everywhere else, they say, if you really want to make a difference in the world, you get on the school board, and then you're really going to be able to whip things into shape. Yeah. And then these people get on it, and you find out that nothing could be further from the truth. And it's almost like you're Gulliver, tied down by all the Lilliputian rules and regulations, and policies just about everywhere. Did I pretty much recall your experience then?
Yeah, I think on our school board at the time, and if I, you know, I don't know everybody on every school board now, so, but I can say that they are people who are go-getters. They want to help. They want to help, and they see a huge problem, and that usually entices them to help. And they have the attitude of we could get things done. And that's usually a type A person. They're somebody who's going to go get the job done. Yeah. And they see a hole and they say, I could fill that. That's right up my alley. So yeah, I wouldn't say everybody's a type A, but
there are a lot of those.
That attitude has to persevere, or nobody would get on the school board.
Yeah, there,
if
they
wanted to maintain the status quo, you would
exactly.
never get on the school
now,
board.
Nobody runs for the school board to say, hey, I would like to be a mushroom and have them shovel crap on me.
Correct.
And keep me from actually helping the kids.
Yes.
Right? Nobody joins the school board to do
nobody
this.
Nobody joins the school board for that.
Where does it go wrong? And I'm not advocating for what Michael has done necessarily, and some of it, like I've said this publicly, I appreciate the fact that I think he's doing what he has done because he cares about the kids. And there, it was safety, and there, and he was sideways with the security guy there. And then you have the superintendent. And yet we have these people who are on school boards that we think are our elected representatives, but it still seems that the hired help runs the system rather than the elected individuals here representing the parents and the taxpayers. Am I wrong about that?
No, that's correct. But the school board isn't hired to run the district. And I think that's where the first lesson comes, right? You go, oh, I can't do that, right? No, you can't. You're not hired to manage a school district. You're not hired to manage this massive engine that cannot quit running. Mm-hmm. You are there simply to guide it through policy. And so when your superintendent speaks out, or a teacher speaks out, or a school board member speaks out, or you can't go in and control those things. That's not your job. Your job is to administer through policy. And if your policies are weak, or you have a gap in your policy, or something has changed that requires a policy to be relooked at or amended, then you need to do that. And so oftentimes there doesn't seem to be the time, and a problem will end up on your doorstep without having been there before. And then you might not have the policies in place that are going to allow for quick and easy addressing of a situation,
okay,
or smoothly addressing
okay,
it.
Okay, now are these policies addressed in statute? Because the one thing I will continue to insist here is that when I see people say, this is not our policy, my eyes glaze over and I want to pull out my my big Klingon war blade like a Star Trek character and go,
right.
Policy is not law, you stupid human. It is a choice. And then I
yes.
want to start swinging, you know. And I can't help but think that maybe Michael Williams came up against that sort of thing. But
could be.
So how much of policy is actually legislatively defined here? I mean, is this the law that all the school boards are supposed to be there is to more or less guide a little bit on the edges, but rubber stamp what the superintendent says as an example? I don't know.
Oh, boy. You know, this is where it's difficult, because you get on the school board and you think, OK, I'm going to have all of this latitude to work with these other school board members to create situations that would be great for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
However, there is a system that's already running. And in order to transition that system to something that you want to do, maybe you want to make healthy school lunches. Let's leave it at that. Right?
Okay.
Something
maybe
simple.
That's your big thing. Okay.
If that's your big thing, great. Let's talk about that. Okay. What's in our policy now? The policy and the statutes that come down from the state tell us what the child will eat, what is considered nutrition in the district. And then we could do a policy where we wanted to change to all organic food, right?
Yeah.
We could adjust what the state mandate is to say, okay, well, within those guidelines, we're going to make all organic food.
Okay, so maybe the state requirement is that, it doesn't matter if you fill them up with 800 calories worth of fruit roll-ups. You know, that's fine as long as they have calories, we're good. And then the district can then say, okay, we would like to actually have organic food and not necessarily coming from a Sysco truck.
Correct. Right?
Okay. You could do that, for an example.
You can change the way you do things through policy. We wouldn't just arbitrarily say, okay, well, yeah, let's just do that. Write up that document and contact organic farmers. There's a whole process to doing something as simple as changing to an organic
farm. All right. So what happens then? What are the challenges involved then if you have an issue with, let's say, security people and a superintendent at a school district that are doing things that a police officer didn't think were necessarily good? I'm just kind of paraphrasing how this was reported as an example.
Well, my understanding is you have Medford Police Department that is subcontracting
the
services.
The SRO.
They're a subcontractor of the school district. They're not a vendor. They're a subcontractor. So, or they've congealed their services because they're both government-run institutions. I don't know the answer to that. But so were there hypotheticals and policies written? I should say, was there a policy written to come out of this without any thought, meaning, or any of this ruckus? What would happen if this happened? What would happen if that happened? What would happen if this happened? What were the guidelines written in those RFPs when they came together?
Request for policy.
Request for proposal, right? Yeah. So when this request for proposal went out, if they had one, then what were the parameters of that request for proposal? I bring that up because yesterday I was given a request for proposal from a school district that somebody is thinking about answering. And I read the request for proposal, and there wasn't anything in there that, as a school board member, I would just hand to somebody. No, we need to know, what is the program about? What does it do? How is it done? Who's going to do it? How does it fit into our policies and regulations? How does it also fit into the Oregon State guidelines, right? This RFP addressed none of that. And so I wonder, in the Medford situation, in any situation really, was it an RFP situation? If it was, what did the RFP say? Is Medford's police department following the guidelines of the RFP, but the school district is ununderstanding?
I don't believe it was that. From what I've been able to read about the conflict there, it has to do that the security head of the district ended up having an issue with Doney,
right?
Officer Doney. And then Medford Police says, fine, or I don't know if he had to do a performance. Now, you have Williams, and it's difficult to, we can't litigate everything that they're involved in right now because it's still kind of a fluid thing. But it strikes me that one of the biggest concerns was that we had an officer talking outside of school and then really talking to Williams. And I wonder if that ends up being the biggest sin of all. Because this had to do with the concern of kids being cycled back into schools very quickly after violent episodes, or they're found with a weapon, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And I can't help but notice, because I interviewed some people a few months ago, they talked about the Medford 549C school district is all over that woke security policy called restorative justice. They have a section of their policies in there, restorative justice, which essentially is we're going to talk the dirtbag kids that are criminals, into submitting and getting back into the school. And now I know I'm kind of tarring with a broad brush, okay? Because we got to get him back in the school. That's right. We got to get him back in the seats right away because, right. $15,000 a year or whatever else the state money is coming in. But it's that Nicholas Cruz type of situation.
Yeah.
The officer had some concerns with some people, and so did the board member. And now it's kind of like there was a whole bunch of shooting the messenger, I think, that happened. Like, I don't know. Is that the biggest thing you can do, talking outside of the board?
Actually, every school board member can say whatever they want, but they cannot speak for the board, right? So I can have my opinion with you today, but if I was on the school board, I can even voice my opinion. Uh-huh. However, I can't speak for the board. I can only speak for myself. So I'm unaware as to whether any school board member on that school board spoke for somebody else. Only the chair speaks for the board.
Only the chair speaks. Okay, so we have the chair as the dictator. That'd be Cynthia Wright then in the 549C particular case.
Yeah, I don't know if they're always a dictator. They may be the only one that's not an outlier.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
They may be the one who can say a message appropriately.
Yeah.
Right?
And that could be one of the issues, too. So the board speaks with only one vote, with one voice. Is this by statute or is this by policy?
That's a really good question because I brought you my training manuals, and this is what Oregon School Boards Association, they are the school board association that helps school boards understand their roles and their responsibilities and learn about bargaining strategies and how do you hire a superintendent. There are legal question persons. So I imagine, or I would suggest, that every school board member in the Medford School District call OSBA. They can do that independently and they can ask a question and they can say, if A, B, and C happened, what would we do?
All right. So what maybe then in Michael's case, like I said, I can't give him advice. He's lawyered up now.
Sure.
But, you know, maybe it would have been better to have contacted OSBA and kind of figure out what we can do here.
Well, I'm surprised that the board, I'm wondering about the board cohesion and their relationships together. Because ultimately what you want to do is have a board that's not in conflict.
It apparently is, though.
That's true. So that precedes this instance, unless all of a sudden just something erupted. But my experience tells me that the board wasn't cohesive. That doesn't mean they all believe the same thing. It means that they're willing to communicate, collaborate, and work together to build collective will. That's one of their main objectives. They need to create conditions for success. They need to create this process. Mm-hmm. Now, I think I told you this before. One of the difficulties with this is the way that the school board elections lay out. So when I got on the school board, I sat in school board meetings for a year, just watching them to see how it happens, you know, what happens. Then I got appointed. Then I was elected twice after that before I resigned. The main thing is that the school board, I got on, then another person gets on in the next year, maybe, because now May election's coming up. So now there's another new person. And then in 2 years, there's going to be another new person. And somebody gets off in the meantime. And it's this constant, it feels to me, at least it was in Rogue River. It felt in 5 years, there were multiple school board changes just simply because of the rotation of school board members. That makes it difficult.
Lots of churn.
Lots of churn and lots of learn. It takes you at least a couple of years, I think. Maybe I'm not as smart as other people, or maybe I delve too deep, but it takes a couple of years to really grasp what is my role here? How am I going to lay this out? What are the positions that are happening in the district that we want to change? And then how am I going to change them? And then you stand back. Now you're at the 5,000 foot level after a couple of years going, this is how you do it.
Was there a possibility that Michael's mistake was when you go outside the board and there was a lot of social media pressure brought to bear here?
Oh, there's so much on there.
Yeah. And a lot of it, when you end up going outside of the board's talk and it almost seems to be trying to whip up concern amongst the public, then is that, are you going off the rails then according to what the proper policy procedure of being a school board member is?
You know what? The coolest thing is that if that were to happen to me, if I had a disagreement with something that happened, I would bring it back to policy. And I would direct my actions directly from policy so that I could make my point. There's nothing more to do. It's already done. It's in policy. Are you saying, board, that you want to go outside of policy? Well, if we're going to do that, we need to write a new policy.
Mm.
So it makes it a lot easier than turning this whole mess. Plus, you have a superintendent speaking now, too, and who's also joined in the, it sounds to me like,
and you have the
Mr. Champion.
And you have the security guy who's also saying, hey, you know, I'm trying to do my job. And
yeah.
And I'm trying to not think that there are any, like, real bad people involved in here, but definitely a different point of view. And
could everybody back up? That's what I would say.
Maybe too late for that now.
Well, I think we could always back up, right? Uh-huh. We can always learn from like, okay, this is what's happened. You're to blame, you're to blame, you're to blame. We don't care who's to blame. Let's go back to policy. Let's see how we can make this happen. Because right now, with, I don't know how long this has been going on.
Since about February.
Okay. So, for God's sakes, for a whole year, we have addressed this situation in a large way and not addressed the main things that matter. And that's our students graduating from high school, being healthy in school.
Well, I don't think they've ignored that. School. I don't think they've ignored okay. that, though, Julie.
Okay. Oh, all right. Well, that's good. That's okay. good. Yeah. But there still takes a chunk of their time. This kind of stuff takes a chunk of time to deal with.
So, okay.
That would be my thing. Let's back up.
All right. What's the point of being a school board member?
Well, you really think that you can make great change. And if you have a collaborative board, you really can. And that's the exciting part of it. You really can get around a lot. You can get around a lot.
You can.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But if seven people are at the table and they all have different types of issues, the reason they're on the school board is because so many different reasons that it can end up just being like, okay, well, where are we getting here?
All right.
What's our priority?
I guess maybe where I was really going there is that you either have what happens though if, and this is what I get concerned about. There's the part that's in the back of my head when we're talking about a school safety issue, and you already have a restorative justice, right. Department in Medford 549C, and this was a question and concern about security issues in school safety. What if the security guy is wrong? What if the board is wrong? What if the superintendent is wrong? And the one guy that's going out there and causing all this trouble ends up being the one really being right. But
I would not ever blame a school board member for coming forth and recognizing their, you know, if they have to solve that problem. Security is huge. When I say, you know, this is kind of taking up some of this, that's true. I think their squabble or this whole media presence or whatever it is that's kind of burning and churning this. It's like, okay, stop that. Let's get down to what is really going on. And security is such a huge issue that they need to do that.
And maybe all the people that are in agreement with you, everything is fine. Maybe they're right, too. But I just recall over the last few years, if there's one thing that we've discovered, that a lot of people that were telling us, yep, everything's fine, everything's safe and effective, they were dead wrong, too. And right. So in bureaucracies, the circle the wagon in groupthink and getting into the groupthink, I think is very powerful. It's a big, powerful influencer, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Social media has really done a great job. Gumming up. If you read a lot of these comments, I quit after about an hour, but it's like everybody's got, you know, a take and everybody knows somebody else who knows somebody, or they talk to that
right.
board member or whatever. So we really all don't, as far as I'm concerned, I can't make heads or tails of it other than to say something is wrong in their safety policy. Something is not being followed in their safety policy. And if that's the case, they need to fix that. Because that core issue is not going away.
Or if the safety policy is bringing students back in because of restorative justice, you know, that those policies do exist they don't call it restorative justice. There's a different way.
Right.
It's like we're going to keep every student in school kind of policy, but it's restorative justice ultimately. And so that's what rang my bell when I first started hearing about this. Gosh, it sounds like someone who's taking issue with a restorative justice, which is part of the policy. And maybe maybe it's because we have a board doesn't want to look at that, or, you know, and I guess they are always talking about disparate impact. Right. If someone is a person of color and ends up being suspended, that looks worse than if you suspend Whitey, you know, for doing something bad, you know, that kind of thing.
Be consistent. That, you know, be consistent. My son, he was in high school. I got a call that he had done blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, I'll come down there. And then, you know, sitting there with the principal, Sid explains it. And lo and behold, he did what was right. What was right? What would have been expected? Although, then the principal backs up and says, oh, no, well, okay, Sid doesn't have to go home for the day and stay out of school tomorrow, you know, now that we've talked about this. I said, oh, no, he'll come home. He'll stay out of school. You figure out what your policy and how, and, you know, look at the policy, pull the policy, read the policy, find out specifically where the errors are that need addressing, and then give those to me, and then we'll look at it then.
All right. You know,
punish him? Fine.
But this sounds to me like a process, though, that would be very frustrating for someone who just wants to get something done. Would it not?
Super frustrating, but I realize that the only way that you can make things work is through policy. That's it. That's all we've got as school board members. It's all we've got.
Yeah, and people think I'm crazy when I say just shut it down and start with a clean piece of paper.
There's because so much that can
change. Because I would be willing to bet you that St. Mary's doesn't have to function that way.
Yes, it's so true. It's a very complicated process that could be super simplified. There are school boards out there that just do a great job, usually in the charter schools.
Yeah.
Right. Because they it's not that they don't have to follow state law or whatever, but there is everybody's in it to win it. It feels like that. And it feels like on a school board, there's everybody's in it to try to fix it.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a whole different place. Whether you're in the mechanic shop or you're in the storefront.
Yeah. There's the part of me that just wants to say, parents, here it is. Here's the state money assigned to your child. Take it. And
I love the voucher program.
Yeah. Best of luck. You know, best of luck with you. Okay.
Right.
Because, and I don't want to, and I know that there are people there from Brett Champion to Havanier, who's in the security, to the board. No one's there to screw the place up.
They're not bad people.
Yeah.
Okay. No, but
there may be some,
none of them.
But there may be some bad policies or weak policies, though.
Yeah, or there may be, or maybe they're not following policies.
Well, they're probably.
Okay, so that's a big one right there, right? Are you following the policy to the T?
Yeah.
Yeah, I might be just too much of a policy hound, but looking back, you know, at the 10,000-foot level, it is really where the board can make an impact.
All right.
That's where it is.
And there we go. This is once again a recovered school board member from Rogue River, Judy Niles Fry,
who still gets questions all the time
about
it's
being
amazing.
On a school board.
Yeah. It was the best education I've ever had.
How long are the terms for a school board? Are they 4 years?
4 years.
Should they be six?
Maybe. Actually, I don't know if they should be six, but that was probably how long an average school board member lasts.
Okay. Well, the reason I bring this up, though, you say it takes about 2 years just to understand how that system works.
Yeah,
and
that was what.
And Michael's new. He's a new guy.
Yeah, he's only been on it, I think, a year and a half. It was 2022, I think I saw that.
Yeah.
So that's not very long. 2 years. He's just catching up. How many legislative sessions did he, or legislative update things did he go to? That also depends. Mm-hmm. Are you going to the things? Are you going to everything? Are you really reading this packet that's this thick in order to get through your next school board meeting? You know, it's hours and hours and hours and hours. They said, told me it would take 5 hours a month. And I'd say it took a minimum of 10 hours a week.
10 hours a week to actually be a good school board member.
Yeah, because you got to learn everything. And then you have people asking you questions. And when you have a messy district, which at the time we did, everybody's calling you. They did this. They did that. They did this. They did that. That happened, you know, and then you realize that there is not two sides. Okay. So never have an opinion until you know all three sides.
All right. So ready, fire, aim, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it can be done. We can make changes. And I think that people just need to understand the school board policies and read them. When you put your kid in a school, you better read them. You better know what you're getting into.
All right. I appreciate that. And thanks for sharing the behind the scenes of being a recovered school board member, okay?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Julie Niles Fry on KMED.